Excited for the football season? Then don't miss your boost pack courtesy of BetMGM. Log into your BetMGM account today to receive your pro football boost pack. Then, apply the token from the pack to any qualifying pro football wagers, and you'll gain extra winnings and more. It's always fun to cheer for your favorite team and celebrate the game-winning drive. And now you can do that while getting in on the action with BetMGM. Make your bets and play along with the full slate of games like never before with BetMGM's daily promotions, live betting options, original bets, and so much more. Log in or sign up today to get your pro football boost pack. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for full terms. 21 plus only. Must be 21 or older to wager. Ohio only. Existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards vary. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to InfertileAF, the podcast. This is episode 292 called Asima Ahmad. This podcast is sponsored by Receptiva DX. Receptiva DX is a powerful test that has helped thousands of women who've experienced recurrent pregnancy loss or IVF failure. The test helps detect inflammatory conditions of the uterus that might be preventing you from becoming pregnant or staying pregnant. The most common underlying condition of a positive Receptiva DX test is endometriosis, with or without symptoms. If you or someone you know has struggled with IVF, Receptiva DX may give you the answer and treatment protocols you're looking for. Talk with your doctor about Receptiva DX because the journey is worth it. Don't let uncertainty overshadow your fertility journey. Explore the possibilities and talk to your medical team about Receptiva DX today. The best part? InfertileAF listeners get a special discount, so make sure to ask for the test and use code INFERTILEAF24 for $75 off. Again, that's code INFERTILEAF24 for $75 off the Receptiva DX test. Thanks, Receptiva DX. This episode is brought to you by Smoo. Life is busy and keeping up with all your daily vitamins can be exhausting. Smoo is here to simplify your health routine and make taking vitamins fun. Smoo's best-selling hormone balance powder is formulated with 7 essential vitamins, minerals, and herbs that are all highly recommended for hormone balance, fertility, and PCOS. Smoo was created by a fellow PCOS sister and has helped thousands of women manage their PCOS naturally. Now is the perfect time to give it a try with an exclusive offer just for my InfertileAF listeners. So here's what to do. Go to the Smooco, THESMOOCO.com, and enjoy a generous 20% off site-wide using code InfertileAF at checkout. Again, go to the Smooco.com and get 20% off site-wide if you use the code InfertileAF at checkout. Take a step towards a healthier, more balanced you today and try Smoo. Thanks, Smoo. Okay, guys, before we get started, I just want to remind everybody that you are more than welcome to join the Fertility Rally family. If you're going through something infertility-wise or building your family through ART and you need a group of people who get it, we have support groups, we have events, we have virtual events, IRL events, we have private Facebook groups, and we basically have members going through anything you can think of. So there's always somebody to connect with. We would love to support you. So check us out at fertilityrally.com and on Instagram at fertilityrally. Secondly, in the name of normalizing the conversation around ART, IVF, and all the things, check out my children's book, which is called Work of Art. It's available on my website at infertileafgroup.com. Thanks. All right. So today I am talking to an absolutely incredible woman, Asima Ahmad, who is the co-founder and chief medical officer of Carrot Fertility. Today, we're going to talk about her family building journey, how she was diagnosed with PCOS, and then we're going to talk about how, as an OBGYN, she was around a lot of pregnancy loss, but it hit differently once she suffered her own miscarriage. We are also going to talk about Carrot and how they strongly believe in fertility care for all, as do I, as do so many of you who are listening. So without further ado, this is Asima's infertility story. Hi, Asima. It's so good to see you again. Thank you for doing this.
Hi, so good to see you again. Same.
Absolutely. I've been looking forward to this all week. So we saw each other at the HerMD conference where you spoke and you were on a panel, but we also have something in common, which is Chicago. We're both from Chicago and you went to Revis High School, right?
I know. It's funny because a lot of people, when I say that, even in the Chicagoland area, they're like, wait, what?
So I have to get, when I heard you say that, I have to give a shout out to my father-in-law, Louis Prado, who worked there for 30 plus years. Such a small world. So shout out to Louis.
Yes. No, I had a wonderful experience there. There's still some teachers that I really think about like pretty regularly, because if it wasn't for their support and their belief and me, you know, I wouldn't be where I am today in terms of being able to solve some of the problems that, you know, we've been working on through Carrot and as a physician. So I was really lucky to be able to go there and be a student to some of those amazing teachers that are there.
Yes. Well, you've had an amazing education, and we can get into all that. And I definitely want to talk about Carrot, which you co-founded and you're the chief medical officer. But before we get into all that, let's talk about you a little bit more. Have you always wanted to be a parent? Have you always wanted to have kids?
Actually, yes. I come from a big family. So my mom is one of nine. My dad is one of eight. I'm one of five.
Okay.
And I was one of those planners. I guess I still am a planner. But growing up, I was like, you know what? I want three children. And this is the age that I'm going to be married by. And this is when I'm going to start building my family. Now, truth be told, it didn't quite work out the way that I had planned, because that's life, right?
Absolutely.
But, you know, I did have a sense of wanting to have children, what size family I would like to have. And I was also aware of the fact that sometimes things don't turn out the way that you are hoping, and that could also be a possibility.
Okay. So when did you decide that you wanted to go into the medical field? Was that also something growing up that you always wanted to do?
No, in fact, it was the exact opposite. So I'm a first generation immigrant, South Asian, and back in the 80s and 90s in the South Asian, and honestly, not just South Asian, East Asian, other communities as well, for those first generation immigrants, the thought was that when you come to the US, you're coming here to be educated and build a career for yourself. And there were three categories. It was doctor, engineer, or lawyer. And because of that, I was like, well, I'm not going to do any of those. And I actually decided I wanted to go into medicine during college. And there were a few things that kind of led up to that. I was always a nerd. I've always been interested in science. Actually, in high school, it was genetics that was what I was particularly interested in. I was like, I'm going to be a geneticist. I'm going to work in a lab. I'm going to study DNA and, you know, be able to do all these things with it. But during college, I was reading a passage in one of our classes, and there was a phrase in there that said, if you kill a man, it's as if you've killed all of mankind. And if you save a man, it's as if you've saved all of mankind. And to me, that just put everything into perspective, in that the value of, there is no value to one person's life. It's invaluable. And the impact that one person can have on the people around them and the community around them and the world around them is so vast. So if there was anything that I could do to help save someone or help make their health better, to me, that meant more than anything. And particularly around like medicine and women's health, it was my aunt's story that really helped me make that decision. My aunt was in South Asia in a small town in Pakistan, and she had unfortunately suffered through multiple stillbirths. So her first pregnancy, she actually delivered in a hospital. She had her baby and they were told that the baby needed further support. So the baby needed, you know, oxygen, putting quotation marks around this. But they weren't able to provide that. They said the hospital didn't have the resources. Now, whether it was the hospital didn't have the resources or it was a financial thing because you have to pay for care upfront in those situations, it's unclear, but they were not able to provide those support, that supportive care to their baby. And unfortunately, my cousin passed away within 24 hours. And then And then she lost faith in the system. So then after that, she didn't have formal prenatal care, had her subsequent deliveries at home with women who had experience delivering babies in that setting, but maybe weren't professionally trained. And again, she had multiple stillbirths. I do have one cousin that survived. And then with the last stillbirth, she delivered the baby, another stillbirth, and she started having a postpartum hemorrhage. And she, you know, one of the last things that she said was like, why does this keep happening to me? And it was on the way to the hospital because they didn't have a vehicle to get her there. And so the process of getting that, her continuing to bleed out, she passed away on the way to the hospital. And I think the reason why it really helped shape my journey was that in her case, there were so many things that were preventable and addressable. And had she gotten the care that she needed and the education that she needed around how to best manage pregnancy, delivery options, et cetera, she would potentially be here today as well as her children. So I would say those are the probably the two key things that helped me decide that I wanted to
go to medicine. And I'd love to talk more about how that influenced what you're working on with Carrot, but let's talk about your story a little bit more first. Yeah. So tell me about when you started to build your family, when you started to try to have babies. You mentioned that it never really goes as planned, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Everybody on the show is an example of that, including myself. What happened when you started to try?
So I started to try in my early 30s, late 20s, early 30s. And so this is the thing. I have polycystic ovary syndrome or PCOS, and one of the symptoms that I have, because there's different symptoms or criteria you might meet to have that diagnosis, is that I don't have predictable periods. Now, in my 40s, they're getting a little bit more predictable as I'm getting older. But, you know, even like in my teens, 20s, 30s, like no clue when my period was going to happen.
Do you know when you were diagnosed with PCOS? Was it when you were younger or was it once you started trying to build your family?
I actually diagnosed myself in my
20s. Wow.
So I've always, like, from day one, irregular periods. And I remember when I was younger, my mom, who had regular periods, took me to clinic to get evaluated. And at that time, they were like, well, you're getting them and you can maybe take birth control pills to make them more regular. But there was no workup to figure out why. Now, you know, in the first few years, it is not uncommon for someone to have irregularities with their cycle, but after several years, it should normalize. And so despite that, no one was really wanting to work up to like, you're okay, you're fine. And what's funny is like when I was at clinic, actually the first time getting that workup, I had a classmate who overheard the doctor and then started asking me in school if I was pregnant. And at that time I had no clue how periods work, how you got pregnant. So I was very confused. But even in my 20s, you know, I would hear the same thing. And at one point I just kind of dropped it where I was like, okay, well, maybe this is another type of normal and maybe I don't have to worry about it. But when I was going into my 20s and my skin continued to look like a teenager, whereas like my sister, because I was like, maybe it's genetics, my sister's skin is gorgeous. It's like glowing, clear, radiant. And I was like, wait a second. I was like, this doesn't make sense.
That's what really going on here.
Yeah. I started to question it and I started learning a little bit more about it. So when I was studying medicine myself and started learning about PCOS, that's where I was like, wait a second. Maybe this is what's going on because this is a lot of the this helps describe a lot of the symptoms that I'm having. So then I advocated for a workup and then I realized that that was the case. And truly, honestly, I wish someone had diagnosed me early because when people historically have thought about PCOS when they're talking to friends, family, or patients, they think about it as pregnancy and periods and them being irregular and, you know, maybe you need some help getting pregnant. But it's a lifelong diagnosis. And so there's that increased risk for metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease and diabetes. And I really wish I knew that, because I could mm-hmm. have spent those earlier years, and all of us should be focusing on our health anyway, but really focusing on it, knowing my increased risks, mm-hmm. because that's something that I continue to work on. So I honestly wish someone had told me that. So mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, so I actually, when I was ready to get pregnant, I was taking birth control. I came off the pill, and we were both mm-hmm. residents. We were both at Yale doing residency. Sometimes we were on schedules where we wouldn't even see each other for a few right. days. It would just be like, we would get home and we'd be so exhausted after working like, you know, 20, 30 plus hours in a row that
right.
we would just be like, all right, we're just going back. You know, like,
yeah, totally.
We just need rest. So it took a few months, and it was funny because when I was pregnant, I didn't even realize I was, because I didn't know when I was going to get my period. I was actually right. on my way to a wedding, and the plane landed, and I felt a little nauseous on landing. And I was like, well, I don't usually feel nauseous on landing. And I was like, wait,
okay.
5.5 uh-huh. to 6 weeks since my last period. So could that be the case? And it actually mm-hmm. was. I mm-hmm. my husband helped me get a pregnancy test. And then, yeah. And we were baffled. I remember when we tested the first time and it turned positive.
Right.
And it was those strips where it's like, you know, those two lines where it's like, yeah. okay, one line negative, two lines positive. We're like, nah, that's not real. So then we tried again. We're like,
I was gonna say, okay. how many tests did you buy? Usually people buy multiple, you know.
I know. So it was a little bit of a surprise, but
yeah,
I did, and I wanted to, and I would say honestly, I wasn't at a place in my life and career where I was truly ready to start having children, but I knew that age affected your ability to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I wanted to have a larger family of maybe three kids. And if I was lucky, those three kids, but that's why I actually started at that point. I actually mm-hmm. talked to, it was funny. There's a couple of reasons behind this, but I actually looked into doing fertility preservation, but you know, with a resident's salary, and we didn't have any coverage for fertility mm-hmm. treatment. It just financially didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And this is a little bit of a tangent, but when I did medical school and I also did like a master's in public health, I took out loans to pay for my education. So even in my 30s, I was like, well, maybe I could do something where I freeze my eggs, but donate some of them. So I was talking, and then maybe I wouldn't be paying so much for the treatment. It'd be more, you know, a cost-effective way for me to do both and use that money to pay off some of the loans and also like, you know, pay for some of the treatment. But I remember talking yeah. to my attendings about it, and I was 30 at the time. And I was like, well, what if I froze my eggs? She's like, you're too old. Nobody's going to want your eggs at 30. Now, obviously that's not the case anymore.
Right.
I always think back to that conversation. I'm like, yeah.
Yes. Isn't it wild though? And you know this, because this is what you do now. And again, we'll talk about this in depth a little bit later with Carrot, but you know, just the fertility treatments and not being able to afford them. And you would think residents should just be part of the program, right? Like, you're doing such a great thing.
And that's career-wise. I mean, that of course, like, there's probably many different factors on why those who are in medicine have higher rates of infertility, and those
right.
especially female surgeons have higher rates of miscarriage. But I mean, that's one of right. the things. It's delayed childbearing, right? It's like right. waiting longer. And then when you're waiting longer, your age is increasing, and that decreases your fertility potential. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Increases your miscarriage rate. So
yeah,
I agree. And that's something that I advocate for on a personal right. level, but also we at Carrot do, is that trainees and people who maybe are pursuing that, you know, graduate education or some form of training, be given that option, right? If it's right for them, and if it's something that they want to do, to be able to preserve their fertility.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So what happened next with your family building story?
So I had my daughter. I have mm-hmm. four children. So we kind of knew how things worked with my body. So we spaced things out. So the first three children are all 2 years apart.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you weren't having any problems really getting pregnant, staying pregnant and all that at that point?
I mean, the question was just like, I didn't know how to time ovulation, because even when I would use ovulation predictor kits, like, my LH would be a little bit high. So sometimes it was just hard to track that uh-huh. with the kits that were available at that time. And I would just play a guessing game. I'm like, okay, well, it could be between this day to this day, which sometimes could be over 2 to 3 weeks of a
right.
Yeah. And so it was a little complicated, just trying to time things. But
right.
Because of me having then been educated by that point about what my diagnosis was, how, you know, your egg is viable for 12 to 24 hours after ovulation, how sperm inside the female reproductive tract lasts 3 to 5 days on average, that really kind of helped to plan things out.
But figure it all out. Right. Yeah. So you
have a perfect process. I'll just say that.
Yes. You wrote a really great opinion piece for the San Francisco Chronicle about suffering a miscarriage. Do you mind talking about that? And, you know, how you'd probably seen that in your work and, you know, your residency in the medical field, but it wasn't until it happened to yourself that, you know, it takes on a whole new meaning, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So my fourth pregnancy was an unplanned pregnancy. And again, it came down to the fact that my cycles are a little unpredictable. Mm-hmm. And at the time I happened to be off birth control, but, you know, again, I thought I had it figured out. And this is obviously the opposite of what I tell all my patients to do, but I was like, yeah, I can have sex now. I'm not going to get pregnant. And
yeah,
but I ended up getting pregnant. Right. And it wasn't something that I was like planning on at the time, but just given what I do every day. And again, I love my children. I felt like it was a blessing. So I got really excited. I mean, both my husband and I were like, well, this is meant to be. So let's do this. And going into my appointment, I remember my first OB appointment, I was 39 when I got pregnant. And mm-hmm. I went in there, I was like, hey, you know, this is an unplanned pregnancy. I'm 39. I know what this could mean. I'm advanced maternal age and there's a higher rate of aneuploidy. So I'm just being cautiously optimistic because I don't even know if this is a viable pregnancy or not. And I'm explaining this out loud to maybe make my, you know, prepare myself for any possible outcomes, but are you really prepared? Right.
Never.
And so then I was going to go at around 9.5 weeks to do my genetic screening testing. And that was the day I was planning to like come home and then tell the kids that I was pregnant. And actually I didn't even tell you about the roller coaster of stuff on the way, but I'll get to that in a second. But it was at that appointment, they're like, you know what, let's just do an ultrasound first before we order the blood test. And I was like, okay, well, that makes sense. And that's when, you know, where there had been a heartbeat previously, there was no longer a heartbeat. The roller coaster that I wanted to mention was that, again, I went into the whole pregnancy being cautiously optimistic, but I remember that first appointment where my OB-GYN did the ultrasound, like she couldn't see everything that you needed to see by that time frame. So it was like 5+ weeks and she couldn't see everything. And so at that point, she's like, maybe this is a non-viable pregnancy. So then my heart sinks.
I was just going to say, did your heart sink? I was going to use those exact words.
Yeah. But again, I was like, okay, like processing. And then she was like, you know what though, this is a bedside ultrasound. Let's get you to do the formal ultrasound. It's a better machine. Mm-hmm. And then I think it was the next day or so. So I'm like holding my breath until then. And then we went and they saw fetal pole. They saw the heartbeat. And I was like, oh my God, thank God. Because I remember she drew her my HCG and I'm like, we should see more by this point, HCG level. So then first it's like, okay, maybe it's not viable. Then it's like, okay, it's viable. We're fine. And then when I came back for that next one, then again, no heartbeat. And then again, she's like, let's do a formal one. But we kind of knew what that meant. And I actually asked her to tell me, I was like, I just need you to say it to me because it's just going to help it really sink in and help me process it.
Mm-hmm.
Like she, you know, I can't remember the exact words off the top of my head right now, but she basically said, she's like, yes, like, you know, this pregnancy is no longer viable.
And I was sorry.
Excited for the football season? Then don't miss your boost pack courtesy of BetMGM. Log into your BetMGM account today to receive your pro football boost pack. Then apply the token from the pack to any qualifying pro football wagers and you'll gain extra winnings and more. It's always fun to cheer for your favorite team and celebrate the game winning drive. And now you can do that while getting in on the action with BetMGM. Make your bets and play along with the full slate of games like never before with BetMGM's daily promotions, live betting options, original bets, and so much more. Log in or sign up today to get your pro football boost pack. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for full terms. 21 plus only. Must be 21 or older to wager. Ohio only. Existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards vary. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Yeah. But I thanked for that. She was great. She was like, you know, I can get you on the schedule if you want to do something. I was like, you know what? I need some time to process this. And then we were going to do the formal ultrasound and kind of go from there. And even my sonographer that day, I could tell that she was just nervous about telling me, or just like, I could see it on her face. Like her face was turning pale. And I was like, what do you see? She's like, well, let me just take some images and run it by the radiologist. Like she didn't want to use the words or tell me, because I don't know. I just felt like she was feeling bad as well.
Yeah.
But I still remember the feeling of like being on that table with the ultrasound and the room being cold and dark, and then driving home and you know, like trying to keep it together, and then driving home and trying to keep it together. And then it starts raining. And then obviously I start crying and I'm like, oh my God, this is like very cliche. Like, I feel like I'm in a movie right now.
Totally.
But yeah. Really, again, I mentioned, I tried to mentally prepare myself as much as possible, but
right.
I couldn't help but feel all the emotions that come with going
through. Absolutely. How did you deal with that grief, and your husband as well? Did you guys grieve kind of the same way? You know, I love talking about relationships and how even though people in this world are going through the similar experiences, oftentimes partners are having really different experiences based on just the way that they process and grieve and deal with things like this.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it really hit him hard as well, because both of us at that point were just really excited about it. We're like, you know, this was like unplanned, it's meant to be, and here we are. And, you know, we joke because like we both work a lot, and, you know, like we joke, we're like, yeah, we have, people ask us like, you have three kids, how do you balance it all? And we're like, oh, I don't know. we just do what we can and hope we don't fall in the process. But
right.
But he, you know, and this is something that I love about him. It's really cute about him. Maybe he doesn't want me to say it on a podcast, but here it goes. But he's like the one that loves watching the rom-com movies. And like when we're watching movies, he's the one that's like crying. And I'm like looking at him like, oh, he's crying again. But like,
oh, that's so sweet. I love that.
Like, no, I actually really love that about him. We joke about it. No, he also, like, we both cried. We cried together. And we actually shared the story with the children when we were ready. Like not just like a day or two in about, hey, you know, this is what we were expecting and what happens. And sometimes it does happen to families and it's unexpected. Sometimes this is a reason. Sometimes we just don't know. But I felt that it was important to share that with them, because I felt that it would help them learn about the, reproductive health. Again, I talk to them all the time because of my profession, and I want them to know their bodies. And I wanted them to know that sometimes things just don't go as planned, and sometimes anything that you can do about it.
I think that's so wonderful. And normalizing the conversation around it too.
Yeah. And they handled it well. I mean, obviously, like there was, you know, my eldest daughter, she's my emotional one, and she definitely felt really sad about it. But we, you know, we planted a tree together as a family. Mm. We actually like under the tree, there's a small bench that, you know, it's like the tree's providing shade on, so you can sit there and read a book. And that was like in memory of like, you know, their sister, because I actually did do genetic testing and I found out that I have a girl. And I did that because I know traditionally and medically it's not required to do testing to figure out why the loss happened, because it is relatively common. But for me, I just needed to know. And of course, that was the reason that, you know, I had given an extra chromosome, because advanced maternal age. So knowing that did help, because again, when you may be a doctor, but when you're a patient yourself, like all the thoughts run through your head, you
totally,
you know, you try it. And as a mom, you sometimes blame yourself for things. And I had a virus at that time. Could it have been that I was sick? And I knew the answer was no, but like, you still run through those things in your head.
Right. So did that experience change you as a doctor? And, you know, the empathy level and just the being able to relate on that level?
I say somewhat because having had spent, and I can spend so much time with my aunt who passed away, it was only brief amount of time, but she left such a large impact on me because she was the kindest, gentlest soul, like one of those people that's just genuinely just beautiful, right? And so because of what she had gone through, I already felt so much empathy towards people who are going through losses because I can't even imagine. And having gone through that, yes, maybe it gave me a little bit more empathy, but it actually helped me be able to talk to my patients about my own experience too and say, I've gone through this and these were my options. Or like, if I'm talking to options, I'm like, these were my options. This is what I chose to do. This is what my experience was like. And I think sometimes having the ability to share those similar experiences helps patients sometimes open up a little bit more and feel that you're not just the doctor, but you are also another woman, another human that has gone through something that, again, was not something that you were hoping.
Absolutely. I can tell you firsthand and from all of my fertility rally members and everything that having doctors who have gone through something, you know, you don't want anyone to have gone through this, of course, but it really does just the level of bonding and feeling seen and taken care of. I think it really does make a difference when that's the case. So I know that's not quite the end of your story, right? Yeah. I love what you did with the tree and the bench. That's so beautiful.
Yeah. So after that, you know, I waited for my body to heal, but we, you know, really talked through whether or not we wanted to continue growing our family. And I think having then been pregnant that fourth time and starting to imagine having that fourth child and what that child might be like and what our new family would be like, our growing family would be like, we decided that we wanted to try. And so now I have, how many months is he now? I think he's like 22 months. I couldn't be that long. But we have a toddler.
Yes.
I still call him my baby, but
yes, always
amazing. He's just the light of our life. He's just like, knock on wood, he's just like a happy baby. Like he's he literally goes around singing happy, happy, happy. The best personification of who he is. I mean,
that's so cute.
Yeah. And you know, and the difference is that because like, you know, my other three children were so close in age, they were all babies together and it was a little more challenging, but you know, he is several years younger than our youngest. So my third child is now 6, almost turning 7, and he's going to be turning 2. So with that age gap, it's actually, it wasn't as difficult as we thought it would be to go from 3 to 4 because the kids are also available to be, you know, like if we're like, here, just watch him for a second, I'm going to run upstairs and grab his socks.
100%. Or, you know,
something like that. They're able to help with those little things. And the interactions that they have with one another, they're just so like, obviously like, you know, I may be a little bit biased, but
that's okay.
I mean, it melts your heart seeing like the older siblings playing with the younger and just how excited he is when like he goes for pickup when they're coming back home from school. Like, he's on the edge of his seat.
Oh, that's so cute.
Heart just waiting to see them. So it's honestly, I'm so grateful. And the thing is, like with every experience in life, the good and the bad, this is my outlook, but I think a lot of people share this outlook is that you're actually grateful that you went through that experience because it makes you who you are.
Yeah.
And you learn from some of those experiences that at the time were so difficult to go through, and it helps you build strength and resilience.
Absolutely. I mean, I always say infertility changed me to my core as a person. And, you know, again, I would never have chosen to go through it, but you're right. You know, the benefits or the pros on the other side of it are like, I do feel just like a changed person for the better, actually. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like you said, you know, your own strength more. I love that you wrote in the essay that you now have a son who is sent by his sister to be the heart of your family. That's so sweet. Yeah. Yeah. Well, tell me about the other family you built at Carrot Fertility, which is such a great company. You guys are doing really groundbreaking things. So let's start with, what is Carrot for people who might not know?
So Carrot is a leading global fertility care platform. And we work with employers, health systems, and health plans. We work to make high quality care more affordable and accessible for people of all backgrounds. And we are now working with over 1,000 customers in essentially every industry that you can think of in over 130 countries, and we cover millions of lives globally.
Tell me about being the co-founder and, you know, the chief medical officer. How did it all begin? Did you just see the space where this doesn't exist yet and you want to change things and break some ground here in this fertility world?
So I always knew that I wanted to see patients, but I wanted to do something also at more of a population level. I actually did my master's in public health. That's when I met my husband. So during medical school, we were both doing our master's on the East Coast, but my focus was on global health. And I envisioned doing something with maybe a nonprofit or going back, and I had done an internship with the World Health Organization, maybe going back and doing some work with them. I didn't picture myself doing something as entrepreneurial, but at the same time, I was open to all sorts of solutions because at the end of the day, my personal life goal was increase access to care, especially around fertility care, because I felt that that was something at the time that wasn't being discussed openly. Infertility wasn't as much of a conversation when it came to family. It was more family planning and contraception, which again is very, very important in and of itself. But it's interesting. It was just not something that I had envisioned or planned, but it all worked out perfectly. So when I was a fellow, and I feel very fortunate to have matched at University of California, San Francisco, or UCSF. I had wonderful attendings that I learned so much from. And I love my fellowship director, Dr. Marcel Cedars, because I felt that I could go to her and ask her honestly anything. Mm-hmm. Anything big or small. I wouldn't just ask her questions about patient care, which would, again, I learned so much from her about diminished ovarian reserve and just everything in general and polycystic ovary syndrome, but asking about the clinic. Well, you know, like Dr. Cedars, how do you choose your employees? Like, how do you hire them? How do you evaluate them? What issues are you seeing with the finances when it comes to patients? And I would talk to the financial coordinators and I'd go back there into their office and some of the most, you know, lovely people that I worked with while I was there. And I would see piles and piles on their desks. I'm like, what is all this stuff? Like, what, like, you look really stressed. Like, what's going on? And they would talk to me about the pre-authorization process and they talk about reimbursements. And they're like, well, this is the actual cost of the treatment, but this is how insurance companies reimburse us. And so I really got to understand the pros and cons of having a clinical practice, a private practice, which is kind of, it was an academic setting, but it was kind of run like a private practice. And just like how finances played a role in access, because not only was I having those conversations with people who worked in the clinic, but with the patients themselves. We got to interact, and it was a very high volume clinic, and we got to interact with many of the patients that came in, and you'd see them on multiple occasions because you'd be there doing their ultrasounds and they would talk to you and be like, hey, well, you know, I'm a graduate student and I really wanted to freeze my eggs, but I couldn't afford it. So I moved back in with my parents. Or I, you know, we're a couple that had been trying for 5 years and we came and did a consultation a few years ago, but we couldn't afford fertility care. So we either switched our jobs or we took out a loan or we mortgaged our home, all these things that people were doing to be able to do the treatment that they needed to build their family. And, you know, sometimes that resulted in delays to care. And sometimes because of that, you would have suboptimal outcomes because now a lot of time has passed and all the burden and the stress and all the friction they were experiencing along the way. And so I wanted to do something to make that whole process better, like make, you know, improve their access, but also improve the process once they got into the clinic and what that journey felt like for them. And so when I was in my fellowship, I went to the 2015 American Society of Reproductive Medicine meeting, and that's where I met my co-founder, Tammy Sun. And she shared her story about having been a patient and not having had fertility benefits and diving into her savings to be able to pay for the treatments. And she was lucky in that she had those savings, but most people don't. And I say, and I think like most Americans don't, but actually most people across the globe have a lot of difficulty being able to pay for fertility treatment, especially if it's not something that's covered at a national level or in other ways, shape, or form. For some people, it can be more than their annual salary. And we talked through potential solutions. And at the end of the day, the thing that we kept hitting over and over again was one of the biggest barriers to be able to access fertility care is the financial piece. And so if there was a way that we would be able to then tackle that first portion, we can also focus on the other pain points and the other things that cause friction along the way.
Right.
So we started working on Cara together.
Yes. And I love that the whole like thesis tagline, all the things behind care, it's fertility care for all.
Yeah.
And just having that notion is just a beautiful thing. And, you know, what you guys have done so far. And I know that it's just continuing to grow and evolve. And, you know, I think being so invested in, and the authenticity is very palpable, I feel like, from you and like the Carrot team, everybody I've talked to is just really wanting to make a difference. And that means so much, especially in this volatile world and everything that's going on with reproductive rights and all that stuff. So,
and you said it really well, and that was our phrase, fertility care for all, because at that time, in those situations where people had insurance from their employer, it covered infertility or fertility preservation. Infertility being a heterosexual couple who's been having regular unprotected sex for 6 to 12 months, depending on their age. And that left out so many other people that needed to do fertility treatment to grow their family, single intending parents, same-sex couples. And for us, and you know, even those people who wanted to maybe have a financial benefit to grow their family through adoption, I mean, those things didn't really exist at that time. And so for us, when we built the company, we always referred to it as fertility and not infertility.
Mm-hmm.
And family forming and fertility care for all, like all paths to parenthood, whether that means you are using adoption of other family, working with a gestational carrier, egg donor, sperm donor, you name it. We wanted to make sure that all paths were supported.
Yeah, that's how this podcast kind of has evolved too, because even though it's called Infertile AF, we do talk about, you know, family building journeys. And like you said, you know, the inclusivity is very important to me. And I know that's how you all at Carrot feel as well, that everybody should be able to build the family that they want to have. So I love what you guys are doing. It's so awesome. Before we wrap, I'd love to ask you, having gone through everything you went through with, you know, the pregnancy loss and everything you've built at Carrot, what do you know now about the fertility world that you kind of wish you knew then? For someone who might be new to this world and is starting to navigate it, any wisdom that you can share?
Fertility is a part of your overall health. And sometimes having infertility or difficulty getting pregnant can be a sign that something is going on with your health otherwise. In the process, sometimes we diagnose people with diabetes or other chronic disease or autoimmune disease, cancers. So when we think about it, we don't want to just think about it as a single point in time. You want to think about it as a part of your overall health. Mm-hmm. And so I want people to take a proactive approach when it comes to their fertility, but not just reactive, in that let's work on learning what our fertility means overall. Let's learn about how our hormones play a role in our overall health throughout our life. Let's optimize that so that when we are ready to start building our family, not only are we more educated and knowledgeable about all our options, but we understand how to best optimize our chances of reaching our family building goals. And the other thing is, like, you know, we talk about fertility and family building, but I also think about it as just a part of your overall hormonal health and your lifelong hormonal health. And so, and this is what we think about it at Carrot as well, is that we want to be able to provide people throughout that whole lifelong journey from, you know, trying to get pregnant or thinking about your fertility, trying to get pregnant, pregnancy, postpartum, the process of if you're going back to work, getting back to work, support around childcare and understanding those support services that are available as you are growing your family, as well into menopause and for men, even low testosterone. So I think I like to have that lifelong vision. And that's how I would hope people think about it, as opposed to this one point in time where I'm going to start having kids, be done having kids, and that's it.
Alright guys, another amazing story, another incredible human who is taking their personal experience and applying it to the fertility world and trying to make people's family building journeys easier and better to navigate. So thank you so much to Asima for the great conversation today. Thank you guys for listening. There's so many good resources out there now. If you guys have any questions or need anything, please reach out to me at Infertile AF Stories on Instagram. Check out my book, which is called Work of Art, which can be found on my website, which is Infertile AF Group. And definitely check out Fertility Rally if you want to join a group of people who are in the thick of it or have recently gone through it and are still sticking around to help give support. It's the worst club with the best members, and we would love to have you. Thanks again. I do have the best listeners in the world. Love you guys. Talk soon.
Excited for the football season? Then don't miss your boost pack courtesy of BetMGM. Log into your BetMGM account today to receive your pro football boost pack. Then apply the token from the pack to any qualifying pro football wagers, and you'll gain extra winnings and more. It's always fun to cheer for your favorite team and celebrate the game-winning drive. And now you can do that while getting in on the action with BetMGM. Make your bets and play along with the full slate of games like never before with BetMGM's daily promotions, live betting options, original bets, and so much more. Log in or sign up today to get your pro football boost pack. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for full terms. 21 plus only. Must be 21 or older to wager. Ohio only. Existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards vary. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.